You're listening to the Crosscheck NHL Show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Here are your hosts, Andrew Berkshire and Mary Clark.
Hello and welcome to the Crosscheck NHL Show. This episode is brought to you by Locked On NHL. Who are this season's top 50 players? Find out on the Locked On NHL podcast. Joe DiBiase, Mike DiStefano, and Rachel Donner reveal the top 50 players as voted on by our local experts across the Locked On NHL Network of podcasts. Subscribe to the Locked On NHL podcast on YouTube and turn on your notifications so you'll never miss an episode. My name is Mary Clark, staff writer for The Win, and you can follow me on Twitter at Mary C. Clark. I'm here with Andrew Berkshire, NHL analyst for the Montreal Gazette, who you can follow on Twitter at Andrew Berkshire. On this Thursday edition of the Crosscheck, let's get back into the Olympic mood with some of our surprise picks for who we'd like to see make international rosters come February. Plus, we'll continue our Locked On NHL crossovers with interviews with Ian McLaren of Locked On Bruins and Joel Bianchi and Scott Bentley of Locked On Red Wings. So, Andrew, before we stop today's show, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm enjoying the cooler weather that we're getting up here where, like, I can keep the windows open all day. So I'm sorry if you hear any background noise, if maybe like a bus drives by or anything like that. But I'm enjoying having some breeze blowing in the windows in my dark basement. So it's been a good time. I had some good time interviewing our guests today, which we did on Wednesday because Mary isn't able to record on Wednesdays. It's her day off. And I'm just getting really excited for the season to start. We're just over a month away now. It's coming up.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of scary because you're like, we didn't have a very long off season. So like, am I like mentally prepared? I'm starting to be like, okay, at my other job, I'm like, I need to start doing this, this, and this. I need to start, you know, planning the spreadsheets and, you know, getting ready. And we also too have to figure out what we're going to do. Cause I don't remember when these crossover episodes will end, but we'll need to start figuring out what we're going to do for our season previews. So it's exciting stuff. But my days off were good. I went to see Shang-Chi on Tuesday, which we'll talk about in our pop culture segment at the end of the show. And then also last night I went to hang out with my friends and do bar trivia last night. So that was fun. I had a very good day off. So thank you for covering on the, you know, interviews. I'm sad I got to miss, especially Ian, because we've been mutuals for a long time on Twitter. But it's good to know that the interviews went well, unlike last time with my mic problem. But everything is all good. So I'm glad you did them. So thank you again for that. But we're going to move right along into hockey because sadly we have no real news to talk about other than apparently I saw Sidney Crosby will be out at least through training camp with wrist surgery.
Speculated to miss the first week or so of the season because he just got surgery and I think they said a 6-week recovery time. So probably miss the first week of the season. I wouldn't be surprised if they keep him out a little bit longer just to like, the Penguins are probably going to make the playoffs, right? So having Sidney Crosby as rested as possible, probably a good thing for them. Maybe not go out in the first round for the first time in a few years.
Yeah, but it's not like anything too major. Just it caught my eye when I was looking at news last night because I missed that completely. But I was like, oh, that's interesting that Crosby's injured. But, you know, tis the season for off-season surgeries still and whatnot. So obviously all the best to recovery, but it doesn't seem like it's anything too major. But we wanted to talk today about the Olympics and continuing on with our thread from last time, because we had mentioned how the NHL is going back to the Olympics for the first time since what? 2016? No, wait. Yes. No. 2014.
2014, yeah.
Sorry. Olympic years always mess with me, especially because now we're going from summer to winter in like 7 months or whatever it is. It's just a little bit confusing to my brain. But NHLers are back at the Olympics, so that means we're going to make some surprise roster picks. I kind of cheated because I already did this for my previous job, but I'm really excited to hear, Andrew, what you have, because you didn't write anything in the doc, and I already spoiled one of my picks because I want to rep some of my Flyers boys here, but how do you want to go about this? Do you, because the way I did my article was just taking, like, you know, players from the top five teams because, you know, China is going to have a roster because the Olympic host always has a team in every sport. Right. And there are, as far as I'm aware, no Chinese players in the NHL. So trying to, you know, do that would have been difficult. So I picked USA, Canada, Russia, or the Olympic Federation of whatever they're going to be called, because I still don't think Russia is still in the Olympics technically next year. So USA, Canada, Russia, Sweden, Finland. We can do other countries too, but those are the ones I picked because they were going to have the most NHLers in them. So I don't know if you want to go by country or just throw out random names and discuss.
Let's throw out random names because I feel like it's fun to do like surprise players that make it and also some like surprise snubs.
Okay. All right. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
Okay. So I picked one of like the ones I picked for my article because I want to rep my Flyers boys. I think Carter Hart is going to make third string goalie for Canada. I know that's a bit of a surprise considering his awful year last year, but I really think he's going to rebound this year and make it onto the Olympic roster because why not? I think I had Canada's goalies as Carey Price, Marc-Andre Fleury, and then Carter Hart. I know you could have put Jordan Binnington in that spot, but I wanted to give the Flyers some love, so I picked Carter Hart instead. And I think there's a really good case for him. I mean, he's performed well on the international stage as, you know, a youth. And he's got promise, but obviously I think it's going to depend on how the season starts for him with the Flyers. But I really want him to make it because I think it'd be really cool. Though part of me is like, don't put any Flyers on there that could get injured and then ruin the playoffs. But that's kind of the caveat you have with the Olympics is it's a possibility for anybody to get injured and ruin, you know, a team's playoff run, much like what happened to, the Islanders some years back? Because didn't Tavares get injured? And that kind of spiraled their season and stuff like that. But I'd love to see Carter Hart get the Olympic nod. I think he, depending on what happens this season, will deserve it. So.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that a lot of people are only remembering Carter Hart for what happened last year, which was a complete disaster. But Carter Hart has a long history of success, and I think he also has the nice advantage of being a longtime Hockey Canada alum, which I think USA Hockey and Hockey Canada are very of the opinion of, like, if you've been in this organization and made it onto teams, you're going to continue making it onto teams. So guys like Ryan McDonagh and John Carlson are probably locks for Team USA, even though they're kind of on the other side of their careers. Like, neither of them are bad, but there's probably younger players that should take those spots. But yeah, I think Carter Hart is totally going to make it in that third string role. Depending on how he performs this year, he might even move up the lineup because...
Really?
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Marc-Andre Fleury is old, right? I think he's turning 35 or 36 this year. Carey Price in the regular season has not performed well the last three seasons, and the Montreal Canadiens are not primed to be a defensive amazing team this year. They took a lot of hits roster wise, so he might not have a very good season, right? So if he ends up having a similar regular season to what he had last time, I think it would be going on quite a bit of faith to assume that he's going to be the starting goaltender for Canada, right? Yeah, he's shown up in the playoffs the last 2 years in a row and played spectacularly. But can you bet on that from midseason form when he's struggling? I'm not sure. You know, like,
don't get my hopes up here because if Carter Hart is like first or second string, then it'll make it even harder for me to root against Canada. If he's third string and doesn't see much action, I'm like, okay, he's fine taking the L and taking silver for the year. But if he's, you know, the starting goalie or the backup and sees a significant amount of time, I'm going to be very sad. I mean, I'll be happy, but I'll also be very sad. So,
well, I think you look at the times that Canada's brought in, like, not necessarily the older goaltenders, but goaltenders who are established and essentially they've been the starter of record, right? Like, Martin Brodeur came in as the starter of record in 2010. And in 2010, he was still putting up solid numbers in the NHL. He had a .916 save percentage that year for the Devils, like one of the better defensive teams of all time, obviously. But still, he was getting onward in years, and he got essentially one or two games, and then Luongo took over, right? So, like, and when Martin Brodeur first took over, Curtis Joseph got the first game in 1998 against... No, it wasn't 98. It was 2002. I'm just, like, trying to remember too far back into my youth. Yeah, 1998 was the year that Patrick Roy took the reins, and he was incredible, but was outdueled by Dominik Hasek. Martin Brodeur didn't start in 2002. It was Cujo, and he let in six against the Swedes, and then they went with Martin Brodeur from then on out. So it's not uncommon for Canada in the Olympics to start out with the established goaltender and go with the younger one, right? So I don't see that as something that would be surprising if they start with Carey Price if he stumbles, they go to Carter Hart. I don't see them going to Marc-Andre Fleury if they start Carey Price, right? Like, I think it makes more sense to go with the young guy, especially if Hart's having a good season. But continuing along with our surprise making it or surprise snubs, I think there's a pretty good chance that Sean Couturier gets snubbed. Not to, wow. You know, I know we're going heavy
this
Flyers
is all
Flyer here.
Centric right now, guys. I'm sorry.
I know. Sorry about the too much Flyers, but I think there's a good chance that Sean Couturier gets snubbed just because for what he does, I think that you're going to have, like, Patrice Bergeron is already there. And I don't know if he brings enough offensively or if he's, like, established to be a center on that team. Like, it's just, it's a tough one. I think Ryan O'Reilly is the Hockey Canada guy to play that role on the fourth line. And Couturier might be that, like, probably should be there, but I think O'Reilly is the guy that they lean on more often, and they probably take guys who are more offensive for the wings, guys like Mark Scheifele or Mark Stone. So
it's gonna be like that year when Claude Giroux got snubbed, so Chris Kunitz could sit alongside Sidney Crosby.
The Chris Kunitz pick. There's always a Chris Kunitz pick, right?
Yeah, it's exactly gonna be like that, and I'm already gonna be mad on Sean Couturier's behalf because dude just won a Selke a couple years ago. He's an incredible player. I mean, like, he doesn't bring the offense, but he sets people up very well.
Yeah.
And does play a defensive style too. But like, dude deserves to be on there, and I'll be okay if he's like the, I guess, the fifth center, because they'll have to bring, you know, alternates just in case injuries.
Squad, yeah.
Yeah, basically just for injuries, or I guess even COVID reasons, one would assume. So my hope is that he at least makes it there, because you're right, he doesn't play an offensive style. But this conversation where you're talking is exactly reminding me of, you know, the Chris Kunitz pick however many years ago when Claude Giroux got snubbed. And that hurts me, because that hurt me then and it hurts me now.
Yeah, it's a painful one. I mean, Chris Kunitz, I know he scored in the gold medal game, but I find Hockey Canada does that thing where, like, oh, well, these guys play together in the NHL, so clearly we have to rely on that chemistry. And it's like, great players will find a way. You know, Gretzky had never played with Lemieux before in 87, so, or 87? Yeah, I think so. 87 or 86, Canada Cup. Anyway, yeah, I think that there's a chance that he gets snubbed. I think the biggest area for snubs, though, it's always going to be Russia, right? Mm. Because everyone looks at the, like, Team Russia, and they think, look at these guys in the NHL. They're all amazing. These are going to be the ones who make it. And then Team Russia names their team, which is, I guess it will be Olympic athletes of Russia again instead of Russia. Anyway, they're going to be half KHL. So I think there's guys who will be left off that are going to be big snubs. I think one of the most interesting potential ones might be Alex Radulov, because I know that he's conflicted with Russian coaches in the past. And he was a guy who was a longtime KHL guy who went to the NHL. And I think that really makes, like, the Russian officials upset. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's left off, and Vladimir Tarasenko's injury history might be something interesting that can keep him off the roster. So I'd be paying attention to that to see if maybe there's a chance that some of those big names in Russia don't get named. I would say also, like, pay attention to guys like Mikhail Sergachev, who's very offensive. Oftentimes, Team Russia likes to bring very defensive defensemen for some reason. I would not be surprised if, like, Artem Zub was their number one guy.
Hmm, interesting. But you make a good point, though, in, like, the KHL. In the article I wrote, I didn't want to dive into the KHL roster because that's not the fun here. I was, you
know,
picking NHL
players.
Well, also,
we don't know, right? Like, we don't watch the KHL regularly. We don't know who's, like, even if you were to just look at points, like, you're not learning that much about those players. You have to actually watch them and feel like who's actually driving play, who's actually ingratiated themselves into, like, the political system of Team Russia. So there's so much that we don't know, but I think there's a good chance some big name Russian NHLers are left off. Like, Valery Nikushkin, I think it's like 50-50 shot that he makes it.
Yeah, you make a good point there. It's interesting, and I always enjoyed the, you know, the way Russia kind of builds their roster, because, you know, they've got these players that are basically relatively unknown to the rest of the world, at least the rest of the hockey world that doesn't watch the KHL. So it makes for some interesting stories if, you know, they break out and stuff like that, but it definitely is high snub potential for your favorite Russian player, because, you know, that we can't take everybody to the Olympics, and somebody's got to get left home. But I'm going to turn to Team USA, and my hope here for Team USA is they lean in super hard to the youth movement. Like, I don't want to see, you know, the
just
same
an
guy. Yeah, God, no, please, 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 please give me my youth people. I mean, like, TJ Oshii was great in the last time the NHL was in the Olympics. Don't get me wrong, but I don't want to see him. I don't want to see Phil Kessel. I don't want to see I don't want to see some of those older guys. I mean, you're right in that, you know, the John Carlsons and the Ryan McDonoughs are probably going to make it because they're still really good. But, like, I want to see the youth. In my list, I had a whole bunch of, you know, younger players. But I think the big surprise for me is I picked Jack Hughes to be on the team. And I know he really hasn't stood out, but I want to see him on an Olympic roster so bad. I know I don't think this will happen, but I want to see it. I want to see these young players, you know, championed by Austin Matthews, and like just the youth movement on this USA team really excites me. I mean, you've got, like I said, Austin Matthews, Jack Eichel, Alex DeBrincat, Brock Besser, Jack Hughes.
The Kachucks.
Brady. Yeah. I mean, Adam Fox on defense, Charlie McAvoy, Quinn Hughes. Like, there's so many young players here that I really want them to get their shot.
Yeah.
Because that's like the most exciting thing about when they did that World Cup of Hockey, and then you had, you know, the young kids team, like Team North America. I thought that was so cool. And I mean, we're never gonna get that back again, sadly, but the reason why I was so exciting is because of all the young players. And I mean, obviously it's been some time since then, so they're obviously older now and we have different young players, but that idea I want to live on in this team. So yeah. I would like to see the Jack Hugheses of the world get their day here.
Yeah, I was looking, like, we give him enough free shout-outs on this show, but I was looking at Jay Fresh Hockey because he's so good at creating these, like, interesting infographics, essentially, right? And the Team USA that he plotted out where he was, like, the probability of them being selected to the roster, like, Team USA always undoes themselves with a couple dumb picks, just like Team Canada does. But the lineup that he plotted out legitimately is very scary. And it just looking at it on paper, I was like, man, like, USA Hockey is catching up. And they're catching up fast. And, like, that's obvious when you watch the World Juniors every year. Like, they're right there with Canada. But, man, like, you look at their defense, Adam Fox, Charlie McAvoy, Jacob Slavin, Quinn Hughes. Like, that quartet there is such an incredible group for the future. You know, and I'm worried that Canada may not be able to match that on D going forward. Because a lot of their guys that are projected to make the roster more in the later, not later of their careers, but like late 20s, early 30s. You've really got Cale Makar as the lone incredible young guy, right? So I look at Team USA and I'm pretty scared of what they can put together, especially with, you know, like, they've got Connor Hellebuck and John Gibson to back them up if the defense fails. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. You know, like, that's a good situation to be in.
Here's the thing, Andrew. I don't know if I trust USA Hockey to build this incredible roster.
They're going to take John Quick as the starter again.
Yeah, they always mess it up by taking the vets. And I get that you want to be loyal to people, but no, we're past the time for loyalty. It's time to win.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm going to say on it, because it's just time to win. And if you want to win, play the younger, more talented players.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we probably should wrap this up, because we've gone a little bit long on the Olympics, but I have one question for you, because we're talking about youth versus the veterans. If you had to choose between Joe Pavelski or Cole Caulfield for this coming Olympics, who'd you pick?
Cole Caulfield.
All right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Who do you think they'll pick, though?
Joe Pavelski.
Yeah, for sure. All
right. Because I know my interests don't align with USA Hockey.
But this is true.
All right. So we're going to end it there, but I'm sure we're going to have more Olympics talk in the future because, like I said, the NHL is coming back to the Olympics. Who knows if it's going to stick, but they're on their way there, and let's hope we get to see some NHLers come February. But coming up after the break, we're going to have the first of our two interviews with Locked On Bruins host Ian McLaren coming up right after this. It's that time of year again, and all eyes are now turning to football as teams are back on the gridiron to start the football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. Get all the updated odds, props, and contests, including online's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest and the world's largest $200,000 NFL survivor contest open now at BetOnline. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 100% welcome bonus. Be sure to take advantage of their opening day super promo, where you can make a bet on Thursday, September 9th season opener, which is today, between the Super Bowl champion Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys. And if you lose, your wager will be refunded, up to $25 for new customers only when signing up and using the promo code NFL100. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. From football to basketball to boxing, write your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait, and take advantage of all the great offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Promo code, locked on. Does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the games live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch all your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes and no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package.
Welcome back to the Crosscheck NHL show. Mary couldn't be with us today because she doesn't record on Wednesdays. It's her only day off. So it's just me, and I'm here with Ian Cameron McLaren from Locked On Bruins. How's it going, man?
I'm doing well. How are you, Andrew?
I'm doing very well. We mentioned before we started recording, it's a quiet house. Your kids are at school. Mm. Mine are in daycare. It's a very calm atmosphere around here. So
yes,
I think finally. We're both in the same mind space right now.
Yeah.
So obviously, big couple seasons of changes for the Bruins. I think they're still seen as a competitive team. But, you know, obviously, we're going to talk about who's in, who's out. But I think most people know some of the big names that are out for the Bruins. Can you explain to us how your perspective on the Bruins right now, with how much of that like core that's been together so long has kind of shifted outward?
Yeah, I mean, I have been surprised at the amount of roster turnover that took place with the Bruins this season. Obviously, dating back to the beginning of last season, we had the departures of Torey Krug and Zdeno Chara. This season or this offseason, we saw David Krejci decide to take his talents back to the Czech Republic, playing for his hometown team there. Tuukka Rask is unofficially not with the team right now, although it's expected that he might join them later this season after recovering from offseason hip surgery. So yeah, altogether, really, the only two players that are remaining from the Cup team in 2011 are Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand. They were obviously essential parts of the team in 2013 and 2019. But really, other than that, it's kind of a mix of some young talent that's coming up, some veterans that they added this past offseason as well. And it's really going to be kind of a different look to the Bruins this season, maybe more than I expected. You know, you have Nick Foligno coming in to add some veteran leadership. He's probably not going to be counted on to be kind of a driver offensively per se, but he'll be responsible in the bottom six. You have some guys like Erik Haula and Thomas Nasek who have come in to shore up the depth up front. And then a real kind of changing of the guard in net with the young rookie Jeremy Swayman, likely to get more playing time, but also Linus Ullmark having been signed from the Buffalo Sabres to either, depending on who you ask, kind of assume the mantle from Tuukka Rask or be more of a placeholder until Rask signs perhaps as early as December for the balance of the season. So yeah, a lot of turnover for sure. That kind of proverbial core really is only Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron at this point. The other guys have moved on or in waiting. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how all the pieces fit together.
It's strange because on the one hand, pretty much everybody signed for this season, right? Like aside from the possibility of Rask coming back, but there still seems to be a lot of uncertainty because you look at like Patrice Bergeron's an unrestricted free agent next season. And I'm assuming that everybody knows that if Bergeron decides to stay, in the league if he doesn't decide to surprise retire. He's going to be back with the Boston Bruins. Like, there's no chance that he's moving on. He's a Boston Bruin for life. But you've also got Charlie McAvoy as an RFA next year. So the assumption, Jake DeBrusk as well, the assumption that I would see going in is that this is almost not a last ride, but it might be seen as like a last ride for the Boston Bruins core to like really get this done with the guys remaining from their last cup win. Is that how the expectations are set essentially for the management or for fans, or is this more of a expectation that the Bruins are more of a middle tier team now?
I think it's a bit of both, really. There is the expectation that, yeah, the core maybe has one or two pushes left. The re-signing of Taylor Hall for 4 years maybe push that up a bit, although the loss of David Krejci kind of balances that out in some people's eyes. But yeah, with Bergeron, he's 36, 1 year left on his deal. He's still a very high-end player, but it's not going to last forever. Brad Marchand, arguably, I was just talking about this on the Locked On Boston Bruins podcast. In our Locked On NHL Top 50, he was ranked 14th, which in my mind was way too low. I had him in top 10 at the very least. He's still a very high end, if not the best left winger in the NHL at this point, I think. So yeah, with the top line based around those two guys, there's probably 1, 2, maybe 3 years left, depending on how Bergeron holds up. It's all based on him. Like you said earlier, it would be a shock if he doesn't end his career with Boston. I think it's a different situation than with Zdeno Chara because of them wanting to infuse some more youth on the blue line, but there's no replacing Patrice Bergeron, especially on the Bruins when they're light down the middle as it is and nobody really coming up to take his spot. So I think expectations are perhaps a bit lower. I don't think they're cup favorites by any means, cup contenders. The Atlantic Division is going to be a real gauntlet with the Lightning coming off two cups. Florida is a very good team. You still have Toronto kicking around. You have Montreal Canadiens who went to the final, but they might be in tough to repeat that or even challenge for a top four spot in the Atlantic to show how hard it will be. So yeah, I think this season expectations are that they'll at least get back to the second round, hopefully get over the hump there to at least the conference finals and go from there. But for me, looking back, 2019 was probably the last kick that they had with that core, extended core group with, you know, Chara and Krug and Rask still in the mix as well.
Yeah, it makes sense. Sometimes your last kick is, you only realize it was the last kick a couple years after, right?
Right, yeah.
That's something that teams struggle with overall is like understanding aging curves and when guys move on and when things kind of fall out from under you. And I think the Bruins have been pretty lucky in that regard that like Marchand is in his mid-30s now. Patrice Bergeron remains spectacular in his mid to late 30s. Krejci was excellent even last year. But speaking of Krejci, the second line center role, there are guys listed on the roster who can play center, but haven't really either played there or excelled there for the last several seasons. You've got Charlie Coyle, Nick Foligno, Eric Halla is a decent center, but is there somebody there who you think is going to be the guy that fits in on that second line?
I mean, as of right now, head coach Bruce Cassidy has kind of said that heading into training camp, it'll be Charlie Coyle's job to lose. I guess he's being paid like a second line center. He's coming off knee surgery, which that injury really hindered him last season. So the expectation is that he will be the guy. Nick Foligno could step up there in a pinch. Halla, Don Sweeney said they might kind of go center by committee, but it seems like it's Coyle's job to lose. The perhaps dark horse might be a young guy like Jack Stadnica, who could really impress in training camp and maybe challenge for that role. But yeah, it's kind of hard for Bruins fans to swallow that, you know, David Krejci for so long had been without capable wingers. And now they have Taylor Hall and Craig Smith on the wing on the second line, and then Krejci's gone, and now they're looking for the center to kind of fill that hole. So I'm not convinced that Charlie Coyle is the second line center. And I really think it's probably something that Don Sweeney is going to address closer to the trade deadline if it doesn't work out with Coyle jumping up to that spot.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And it's a tough position to fill. I mean, as I think the Montreal Canadiens are going to find out this season, having lost Phil Deneau and Jesperi Kotkaniemi, that it's going to be a lot of pressure on Nick Suzuki and incoming Christian Dvorak. But I digress. The Boston Bruins are still the team that should be slotted into that, at least the fourth spot in that division, a very tough division. But, you know, I think a lot of people watching the Bruins, the identity of the team is still based around that 2011 Stanley Cup champion team, which was like the prototypical Claude Julien, extremely tight defensively, hard checking, grinded out fourth line kind of style. Do you think that the identity of the Bruins or their style of play is going to be changing this year at all because of all of the roster turnover over the last few years? Or are we going to see just like people who come in become ingratiated into that Boston Bruins identity instead of the team itself changing?
Yeah, I think we've seen an identity change already with Bruce Cassidy having come in. He really helped change things in terms of moving away from that kind of big bad Bruins style to more of a up-tempo, you know, defenseman moving the puck up, more offensively minded style as well. So I don't think we'll see a big shift from, say, last season to this season. The guys who are being brought in really brought in to kind of shore up the depth up front. I mean, all you have to do is look at the fourth line of the Bruins and see they have, you know, back in 2011, it was built around Gregory Campbell, Sean Thornton, like still face punchers and, you know, really guys who are just out there to hit or kill penalties. But they actually have the Bruins now some skill on that line. Like even last year, Jake DeBrusk was there for a time. Curtis Lazar is on there. You have a guy like Trent Frederick who can mix it up, but he also has some offensive upside that he really hasn't shown. So I think the Bruins, yeah, they're always responsible defensively in their own zone. Bruce Cassidy is always asking for, you know, a full 200 foot effort from everybody on the ice. And I think we'll still continue to see that. And the new guys coming in will, I think they were specifically targeted because of their ability to have shown that in the past.
All right. Before I let you go, Ian, can you plug some stuff that you're doing heading into the season?
Yeah, sure. We, Locked On NHL, or Locked NHL Bruins is where you can find the podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Heading into the season, you know, we're going to be doing some season previews, slowly getting into some predictions and all that. And yeah, just Locked On Boston Bruins, subscribe so that nobody misses an episode. And we'll be back to daily beginning September 20th.
Oh, man, I can't wait for the season to get started. We're getting real close now. We're just under a month away, just over a month away, sorry, from the regular season beginning. It's going to be a fun one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be nice to see the Bruins and Habs playing again for sure.
Absolutely. Although I feel like that rivalry has lost a little bit with like both teams losing the chief guys that made it so good those early 2010s, like when Lucic moved on and Thornton was hurt and Subban was traded. Yeah. Even like Dale Weiss to an extent. Like some of the hate is gone, right? Like
There are rumors that the Bruins have asked the Devils about Subban's availability. So that would put a bit of a wrinkle into the rivalry for sure.
I don't want to see that. I'm sorry. Like I'm a lapsed Canadiens fan, but I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
I would rather not watch those games.
yeah, for sure.
All right. Thanks so much, Ian. We'll try to get you on sometime during the season to talk some Bruins.
For sure. All right. Thanks a lot, Andrew. Take care.
Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. And the new and improved Built Bar is even deliciouser. If you don't know the Built Bar flavors, well, you're missing out, as you've got coconut, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, and German chocolate. There's something for everyone with Built Bar, and if you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mix box, where you get two of each of the 9 flavors. Not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're healthy too. Built Bar is great for any health-conscious person, as you can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. All the Built Bar flavors have between 17 to 18 grams protein, calories ranging from 130 to 180, only 4 to 5 grams sugar, and only 4 to 5 grams net carbs. All amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy. Order today and get that raspberry or mint brownie, or whatever you'd like. All bars are covered in 100% chocolate and are soft and easy to chew. So go to Built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com.
Hi, and welcome back to the Crosscheck NHL Show. I'm Andrew Berkshire. Unfortunately, Mary couldn't be with us for this one because we're recording on Wednesday, and Wednesday's her day off, so she couldn't do it. But I'm here with Nolan Bianchi from Locked On Red Wings. And how you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me, Andrew.
That's my pleasure. We're continuing our Crosscheck summer crossover to preview all 32 of the NHL's teams with our Locked On local experts. So I guess we'll get right to it. We've got some general questions for you. First of all, who's in and who's out for the Red Wings this year?
Oh, man. Who's in and who's out? That is a good question. I don't have the transaction list pulled up. Basically, Franz Nielsen is out, and that's pretty much the big one. Bobby Ryan is out. Luke Glendening is out. A couple guys, you know, expiring unrestricted free agents that you kind of were waiting to get off the books a little bit. Darren Helm. I know Greg Wyshynski wrote that article last season. That why is Darren Helm still in Detroit? Good question. Still going to roast you for it, Greg. Love your work, but you know, those types of guys were in Detroit and kind of cluttering the lineup over these last couple of years. And those are the ones to kind of fall off the books over these last couple of seasons. Jonathan Bernier is another big departure for the Detroit Red Wings. He was a rock in net. I feel like it really can't be understated. And I know people who don't watch the Red Wings probably think this is crazy, but Jonathan Bernier, the true MVP of that team. I was actually digging around the other day. At some stats, and last year the Detroit Red Wings combined in goal had a 14th best save percentage in the league. That's not the end all be all by any means, but you know, it kind of tells you that in the face of adversity, both of these goaltenders, but more so Jonathan Bernier, was kind of shutting things down. And then on the addition side, Pugh Suter comes into the mix. You know, Jacob Verana comes over in that Anthony Mantha deal last year. Nick Leddy comes over. So it's going to be kind of an interesting season for the Red Wings. I'm not sure exactly what to expect, but probably some sort of finish that was similar to the one they had this year. I don't think it'll be good for them to be a bottom five team in the league this year, but the draft lottery and the 2022 NHL draft might say otherwise. So it'll definitely be interesting. I'm not exactly sure which direction they'll step, if they even take a step at all in either direction.
They're kind of a team stuck at a crossroads, right? And I don't want to say stuck, because I think it's clear what they're doing. They're rebuilding, right? And you mentioned the contracts that have fallen off. Those are not the last ones, but you've got some more contracts that are going to expire in 2022 that are essentially the last holdovers of the bottom of the lineup players that Kenny Holland signed to ridiculous extensions, right? Yep. So it's starting to slowly become Steve Yzerman's team, and you can start to see some DNA of the framework there of what they're trying to build going forward. I think we saw a hint of what Jacob Vrana can do for that team coming in replacing Anthony Mantha last year. But it's pretty fun to see all these names that we are not unknowns per se, but players that could maybe make an impact that the league in general has either underestimated or doesn't know of in like a household name basis. So I think the Red Wings are in an interesting spot, but this season, because we've got some relatively big departures and Bernier obviously is being replaced by Alex Nedeljkovic, do you expect the Red Wings to play a little bit differently, or is it essentially growing the same system with the younger players now?
I don't necessarily know that they'll play differently, and thank you for including the Alex Nedeljkovic addition. I don't know how I missed that, but that was probably the biggest one of the offseason. I'm still a little bit in offseason mode. My brain's not necessarily the synapses.
Aren't we all? Feel don't them. Worry.
I can hear like a just barely flickering out. But yeah, no, I don't necessarily know that you'll see a different style of play. But what I do know is that last year they really, you know, I don't want to come out and say that they weren't always a defense first team under Jeff Blashill, but last year it really seemed like they committed to keeping pucks out of the back of the net and letting the rest, you know, kind of work itself out. Unfortunately, what that's meant over the last 2 years is that goal scoring and offense in general has been absolutely stifled. And so I think that might be an area to watch for in terms of change. They brought in Alex Tanguay to help them fix the power play. He had some a hand in fixing the Iowa Wild's power play as well as their offense at large. You know, he's kind of coming in and from what we understand is going to be basically teaching guys how to make space, basically how to create, how to play freely within a structure that allows, you know, creativity and things like that. And that's really what the Red Wings need badly. Philip Zadina, hey, he's had two good seasons, you know, maybe not the counting stats that aren't there, but he's transitioning really well into a two-way forward role. Just guys like that, that you kind of really hope that they can figure it out, and that maybe some minor tweaks and adjustments will maybe help Philip Zadina bury that one timer from, you know, the top of the dot or wherever he is. So I don't necessarily know that we'll see a different style of play. I would assume that they're still going to be defense first. And we should also throw into the addition pile Moritz Seider. He'll be making you know, his debut, I would presume, on opening night. Very excited about him. And so I don't necessarily know what to expect, because last year was kind of just like, hey, we all saw what happened in 1920. We don't want to do any of the 9-0 losses, the 7-1 losses, you know, things like that again. And it looks like they played to that. They ended up with a couple more wins, a little more confidence heading into the season. Will that carry over? I don't know. I think once, you know, these guys start to get things down on the defensive end, that'll kind of open things up. But really, you know, you get the sense that they really love the two-way player. And so that is kind of the approach that they're going to take. And I don't know at this point who will fill exactly what role, because we don't know what they like in them yet.
Very true. You spoke about the power play being a focus of concern, or I guess an area of improvement. How big of a factor do you think Nick Leddy is going to be on that blue line, considering the makeup of the Red Wings blue line is not talentless, but pretty heavily focused on defense, right? And Letty's a bit more of a puck mover. He had about a third of his points in the power play last year on Long Island in a very defensive system as well. So do you think that his addition could add a little bit of flash that can move the puck well on the back end and maybe give Zadina more opportunities to unleash that one timer?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's all, like, you know, you're kind of trying to work on in this season is just helping guys become smarter hockey players, help make the right play also an easy play, and kind of finding the system that works well for everybody. And I think bringing in somebody like Nick Leddy to kind of shore up the power play is going to be something that's very, very helpful, because yes, Philip Peronic had a pretty good 1920 season, but he just wasn't that in 2021. I don't know that he's going to be your power play quarterback. As a matter of fact, I would probably bet against him being, you know, the guy who runs your power play of the future. And you look at a lot of their games last year, they went on like an 0-for-44 streak on the power play last season. They had like a mix of Dennis Cholowski and Christian Juice quarterbacking it. And in those games, it was like 11 straight games or something like that, where they didn't score on the power play. And like 9 of them, they lost by a goal, and they went 0-for-1, their opponent went 1-for-3 or, you know, 2-for-whatever. And special teams to me is the, while I do think that it kind of is a representation of your team at large in a lot of different ways, I do think that as well, you know, if you just get a couple extra goals, you know, here and there throughout the season, 5 more goals throughout the season, that would wind up making a pretty substantial difference in the long run. And I think bringing somebody like Nick Leddy, who has experience and who can bring along those other guys in a way that a Danny DeKeyser simply can't. I'm all for veteran leadership, but you need guys who can lead by their actions on the ice and say, hey, when I make this pass, you got to be over here, or can show, you know, guys things in real time. So that to me is the most exciting thing about Nick Leddy, as well as the prospect of him kind of tutoring Moritz Seider and taking him under his wing.
Absolutely. And I know you kind of touched on this a little bit before, and you were saying you don't know what to expect, but let's take it from the idea of you're in Detroit Red Wings management. From their perspective, what's the expectation? Like, what do you feel is the expectation from them this season? Is it just another step forward? Would they be satisfied with another bottom tier finish in the league to get another high draft pick, continue this building process, or are they looking at maybe next steps?
Well, first off, I just want to say, if Buffalo out-tanks everybody and gets the number one pick again, I might quit the NHL, because it feels like something that just came to me yesterday and dawned on me yesterday was like, how annoying that the NHL finally changes its rules and it only benefits the Sabres. So that's just something to watch for. Anyways, a 5 to 10 spot in the lottery to me is kind of where you want to finish this year. So, you know, 20th to 25th in the league or something like that. Like, I don't think it would be good to scrape the bottom of the barrel once again. Like, you got guys on your team who have been a part of your core for a long time. Dylan Larkin, your captain, being the headliner of that group, who have been through a lot of bad seasons, and you just can't keep doing that. And so, yes, I understand the talent at the top of the draft is enticing. And yes, with the lottery rules this season, if you do fall out, or, you know, you fall to what, seventh best lottery odds, and you don't have a chance at getting the number one overall pick. So that's a little bit, you know, kind of a bonus if they do come out and completely lay an egg. But I get the sense that, given the point that they're at in the rebuild, given the guys that they expect to have up here next year, including Moritz Seider, maybe Jonathan Berggren, maybe Lucas Raymond, we don't know. I think it would serve them well to win some games and go on a 3-game winning streak here and there, 4 games or whatever. You know, don't really be in the mix till the end, but, you know, be somewhat competitive around the trade deadline, to the sense that, you know, you're sitting there and in a different world, it's looking like, hey, maybe we could buy or something like that. But I don't obviously want them to buy at the deadline, but that's just kind of the you know, the place that I would like them to be in.
Make them think that they might, or make the fans think that there might be a possibility of buying, but don't.
Yeah, like buy. 4 games out of a playoff spot, you know, yeah, like give that, some hope. That would be sick come trade deadline.
Be the heartbreakers, right? Make it,
yes.
Be the team that kills the team ahead of them from making the playoffs. Have some fun.
Exactly. They got the Leafs in the last game of the season, so.
Oh, that would be pretty great. That would cause an absolute meltdown. I don't think it's possible, but.
I don't think so either. Oh, no,
that would be way too funny. Like, I would enjoy it way too much. Before I let you go, Nolan, plug your stuff a little bit for us. Tell us what you got going heading into the season.
Yeah, so we are going to kind of like you are here, start up our Atlantic Division previews. It's been a while since we've been with our friends from the Atlantic. So we actually started that today with Ross Levitan from the Locked On Senators podcast. We're going to be kind of going through team by team, very similar to this, kind of getting a feel for what to expect now that they're back in the conference. Still, since it's off season, we got some other shenanigans stuff going on. We got Tony Ferrari coming on the show later tonight to talk a little bit 2022 draft. So we got a lot of stuff going on, especially as the season ramps back up. You can find us on Twitter at @LO_RedWings, me on Twitter at Nolan Bianchi. And then my co-host who could not make it today at Bentley Scotty. He hosts Locked On Tigers and Locked On Red Wings. So go give him a follow. He's a great guy and a even better podcaster. Actually, no, good podcaster, even better guy.
Good. Thanks so much for doing this, Nolan, and great rest of your week.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Do you know 85% of people who play daily fantasy sports lose? Is it really that surprising? The game is rigged against you. You're playing against thousands of other lineups, not to mention experts who have more tools and more time. You don't stand a chance. Introducing Stat Hero. It's the first ever daily fantasy sports book that puts the player in control and winning within reach. Here's how it works. Stat Hero shows you their lineups and dares you to beat them. It's you versus the house in a head-to-head fantasy matchup. You name the stakes. Winner take all. You have the advantage. Stat Hero is showing you their lineups ahead of time. No one else does that. I may not be into daily fantasy sports, but I know Stat Hero is the place to be. See the competition ahead of time. Pick the lineup you think you can beat and go head-to-head with no pool of opponents. You are in total control. Stat Hero is DFS the way it was meant to be. One-on-one. Play Stat Hero now and change the odds. So go to stathero.com/lockedon, sign up for free, and right now you can get 3 times back on your first play. They're giving you a 300% match. That's unheard of. So go to stathero.com/lockedon. stathero.com/lockedon. All right, Andrew. So I know you were waiting to talk about Shang-Chi with me now that I've seen the movie. So, big spoiler warnings for anyone who hasn't seen Shang-Chi. So
yes,
go back.
Huge spoiler warnings. Don't listen to this part if you haven't seen Shang-Chi, please.
Don't listen. Save this part of the podcast for when you see it, because it is definitely worth seeing. I can guarantee you that. So what do you want to talk about, Andrew? I really enjoyed the film.
Oh my God, it was so good.
It was. It really was. And I was paying extra attention to, you know, the fight scenes and the choreography and the direction. And you were right. It was incredible. Definitely some of the best, you know, action choreography I've seen in a film, or at least in a Marvel film.
Yeah, easily the best fight scenes in a Marvel movie. I think we can say that. Like the hand-to-hand combat. Like all credit in the world to Simu Liu for learning all that. And like I've watched a couple interviews with him where obviously he's crediting his stunt doubles as well, because that's something that like doesn't get talked about enough, the hard work of stunt people in Hollywood and what they do. But he was saying like the hardest thing for him wasn't just learning the moves, it was learning flexibility, because he just was not that flexible. And like the jump kick that he does in the bus scene where he's like does the splits in the air, he actually did that.
Oh.
And he said that he had to work like a really long time to figure out how to like kick that high, essentially. So all credit to them. I loved the dynamic between him and Katie.
Yes.
Awkwafina, just incredible. Very like, it was such a real relationship.
Yes.
You know, and very easy to like pull you into the movie. And his sister, I love that she wasn't just there to be his sister, Zhang Ling. She had her own story, which, mm-hmm. you know, you continued the into the post-credit scene. Yep. Yeah. I love that, and how they centered her a little bit and how she was ignored by their father after their mother was killed. Just like everybody had their beats, you know? And not to mention, like, I remember when they cast Tony Leung and Kevin Feige was out doing like a press for something, and he was saying like, oh, Tony Leung's one of the greatest actors of our generation. And I was like, who is this? Because he's only done Chinese films, right? And then watching this movie, I was like, yeah, he's amazing. Like, he was absolutely incredible in many ways, the heart of the movie, right? Like, mm-hmm. such an empathetic, interesting villain. And by the end of it, you're almost like on his side, you know, like he's been manipulated, and this super powerful guy who's been alive for thousands of years is still vulnerable because of grief. I loved it. It was so good. And man, I was very skeptical when I saw the dragon in the trailer, because first of all, I thought it might have been Fin Fang Foom, which is like a very I've read that it's a very racist character, essentially, like a very not culturally sensitive character, but it's not. And I was like, how good can they make a dragon look? And man, it looked unbelievable. It looked mm-hmm. so good. That yes. final climax in Talo was probably the prettiest any Marvel movie has ever looked.
Yeah. I was a little skeptical too when I saw, you know, the dragons come out, and like, okay, because you get the big monsters and you're like, all right, there isn't going to be a lot of like, you know, one-on-one really intense action, but I like the way that they did it, and you know, everyone played their part.
Yes.
Which I thought was nice. And obviously the end final blow was really cool. It was like super hype. I would have loved to see, you know, more one-on-one, but we got that with Shang-Chi versus his dad at the very end too. And really, you know, the way that they, you know, CGI'd the rings, I thought that was incredible. And I didn't realize, because I'm not a comics person, but I didn't realize they were actually like, they're supposed to be like rings for your fingers.
Not yeah, like, yeah, it's completely rings different for in the comics.
Like bracelets. But I think that gives you more opportunities to do stuff with.
It does. And also this tied it more to Chinese culture, because there is those rings worn that way are actually part of like their weighted rings for, I forget the name of the martial art, but there is a specific martial art in China that uses weighted arm rings, essentially. So it makes more sense than the rings that they use in the comics, which like each one of them has a different power, where these have like, they just all work together to create a kind of power. Also, I loved when they went at the end of the movie back to like talking with their friends over dinner, yes. and Awkwafina like totally called out the Shang-Chi did like a Kamehameha move, which is just like, I love references to Dragon Ball Z and anything, and the fact that they actually called out that that's what it was mm-hmm. fantastic.
Yes, it was great. Their relationship was definitely a favorite of mine, mostly because mm-hmm. it's non-romantic, and it pinged me immediately because I have a very long-standing relationship with one of my best friends, and he's a guy and I'm a girl, and we have a very similar, like, it's a very similar relationship that we're very friendly with one another, but it's not romantic. So I hope it stays that way, because I definitely saw a lot of myself and my friend in that relationship. Like, we don't need romance. It's perfectly fine the way it is. I enjoyed it, and it was definitely one of the beating hearts of this film.
Definitely.
But shout out to all of the cast for being super attractive. Everyone in Shang-Chi's family, congratulations on your good looks. I'm proud of you here. Like, I know Twitter is super thirsting on, you know, the dad, and sure, I get it. But the mom and the sister, also A+.
Oh my God, the fight scene between his mom and dad at the beginning yes. of the movie. so beautiful and so cool.
Relationship goals. I know that he's a villain, but relationship goals, please and thank you. I don't know who I want to be more in that scenario, but the point is, very gorgeous cast, gorgeous movie all around. I think the only thing that tripped me up is the Iron Man 3 references, because I have not seen that movie in a very long time, and I don't really remember. I remember, like, you know, the whole Mandarin twist being like a gag, something to that effect. So that stuff in the moment kind of not felt flat, but I was like, okay, I'm trying to remember what happened in those movies. So unless you want to, like,
the plot of Iron Man 3 wasn't like that important. It was just that Trevor played the Mandarin, right? I really enjoyed when they were at dinner and Wenwu was saying, like, and they named me after a chicken dish.
That was really good.
Like, calling out Marvel's past essential racism about, or like, cultural insensitivity in handling Asian characters, I think was probably very appreciated by the Asian community at large. And, like, I was reading a Reddit thread talking about the movie and how people, Chinese people, felt about how it represented their culture and how they felt about like the movie in general. And it was pretty much uniformly positive. And the only thing that I saw complaints about was that the English translation of some of the Chinese dialogue robbed it of some meaning. So they were saying they kind of felt bad for people who didn't speak Chinese because they weren't getting the meaning of some of the sayings.
Yeah.
And that is super interesting to me, that they actually put in the research to use good Chinese dialogue, but unfortunately, like, subtitles do miss stuff.
Yeah, often, I'm gonna say, right? Like I watch anime, so sometimes it does do that. Depending on where you're watching, the meaning does get lost.
It just gets simplified.
And I've been playing Ghost of Tsushima also in Japanese with English subtitles, so, like, I don't know the, like, if there's any differences, but, like, it's one of those things where, like, you definitely miss something by not being the native speaker of said language. But I was surprised at the amount of Chinese in the film. I didn't really know much coming into the film other than it was Chinese. But I was surprised at the amount of, I mean, you spent, like, a whole ton of the first part of the film speaking Chinese. And at first I was like, am I in the correct theater? At first I was like, did I somehow? But then I was like, no, their lips match the sounds that they're making. So I was like, okay, I just wanted to make sure, because I haven't been to a movie in, what, nearly 2 years now. So at first I thought it was me that did something wrong, but it was really cool to see. And I would absolutely love more films to do that, but also please make captioning more, you know, like, more of a thing in movies, just like the way we do it when we're watching at home. I watched the most recent Spider-Man film, the most recent Tom Holland Spider-Man film. It had captions on it the whole time. And I'm like, okay, this is perfect. I can pay attention and also see what's going on. Because sometimes in movies, like, the sound, I can't always hear things because the music is so loud sometimes. But I really enjoyed this film. It makes me super excited for the rest of the MCU. I thought, you know, like, the first mid-credit scene was really interesting in bringing them into the wider Avengers world. I like how the, like, you know, the Avengers now are just like, welcome in, kids, get ready for the ride. I'm like, oh, that brings me so much joy. So I'm really excited to see where we go from here. I mean, Eternals is next, I think.
Yeah, I think my prediction is the MVP of Phase 4 is going to be Wong.
Oh, yes.
Like, how good was he in this movie? Just small parts, but every moment, you know, it's so good. Like, when they break at the end, just bring Wong for karaoke.
Yes.
Amazing. So
incredible.
Good.
Incredible stuff. I definitely could talk more about this film, but I think overall is that we enjoyed it a lot. Sets up really well for the rest of the MCU. And I think now I'm going to see Eternals in theaters, too. I wasn't sure if I was going to. I don't know, just because it's one of those films that could definitely is very out there in terms of, you know, its looks, what it's bringing to the MCU. It's not really grounded in anything we've seen before. It's bringing a lot of out there things. But that excites me because that's what I hoped, you know, Phase 4 of Marvel would be, because we've done the established superhero stories. Now it's time to get weird and wild, and I'm all here for it. And it's made me super excited about the MCU again, because I was starting to get superhero fatigue of the same thing over and over. That's why I didn't watch Black Widow, but because it was the same thing over and over again. But now I'm all in for the weird. Get me these next Marvel films as soon as possible. Please.
Yeah, this is the first Marvel property that I've gone into not knowing very much about the comic character at all since Guardians of the Galaxy, and I loved Guardians of the Galaxy. Don't know much about the Eternals either, so I'm excited about where they're going. I like going in not having, like, a preconceived notion of what things are going to be. And the fact is, like, they reworked Shang-Chi so much because the original characterization was so like stereotypical or tropey that knowing the comics might not have actually had that much of an impact anyway. So I'm glad that they're doing new stuff and working with characters and storylines that I haven't read already.
Yeah, I think they're doing a really good job of that and hyping us up for the future. But that's all we have for you today on the Crosscheck NHL Show. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Make sure to follow us on your podcast platform of choice, from Apple to Odyssey to Spotify, and rate and review us while you're at it. You can follow the pod at Crosscheck NHL on Twitter, me at Mary C. Clark on Twitter, and Andrew at Andrew Berkshire on Twitter. We'll be back on Tuesday with some more puck talk. See you next time. Betting on the NHL doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks, blowout specials, and wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get your podcasts.